You're listening to All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. As we do at this time each Friday, a review of the week in state politics. Here for the conversation are Becky Gray of the Conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the Liberal North Carolina Justice Center. Hello again.
Hello.
Hey, Jeff.
Early this morning, lawmakers in the North Carolina House gave final approval to their proposed state budget. The $22.9 billion spending plan includes an average teacher raise of 3.3%, smaller raises for most state employees, full disclosure, that includes me, a one-time bonus for those receiving public pensions, and tax cuts of $350 million. Listeners have probably heard some of those top-line items. One of the questions I hear most often from people not in this Raleigh political bubble is, how does this affect me? So perhaps setting aside for a moment educators and state employees, what is it in this budget that an engineer in Cary, a small business owner in Greenville, a stay-at-home parent in Burlington should care most about and why?
Jeff, that's a great question. Probably the most important thing in the budget is the education portion of the budget. It's about 57% of the total spending that we do in North Carolina. It affects everybody's life. So even if you don't have kids or grandkids in the school system, if you're not attending a community college or a university, 57 cents of every dollar that you send to the state coffers goes for education. So we want to ensure that that money is being well spent, that we're not administrative heavy, that the money's going into the classroom. And then, you know, as a society, we want to make sure that we are preparing a workforce for jobs today and jobs tomorrow. So if I had to say one thing that really is important to every North Carolinian, I would say that it's the education portion of the budget.
And I would agree with that. Of course, I would disagree as to whether this budget does a good job of that. I mean, we have 91,000 more students in K through 12 since 2008, and per pupil spending over the last 7 years is down 5.4%. So in my estimation, and I think it would be important for everybody who cares about sort of preserving and knitting together our middle class society and the role that our public structures and systems play in that, that this is what I would call a small budget. Not a small budget in a complementary sense, but a small, like you might describe a small person, someone who is sort of inward looking and not ambitious and not caring about others. That's what I mean by a small budget. It's a budget that is sort of frozen. It doesn't even keep up with growth in inflation and population growth in our state. So it's very unambitious at a time in our state in which, you know, things have turned around for a lot of people, at least in the urban areas, and we have the means perhaps to do more and to do more for the middle class and for people in need in our society. It's a very small, inward-looking, unambitious budget. And although the House does make some improvements in some specific programs that the Senate targeted, I'm, again, pretty disappointed in what we've seen.
And I would disagree with Rob's assessment of that. I think that it's a very aggressive budget. I think it's a budget that sets the priorities for the state, and education is a good example of that. There are increases for teachers. There's also one thing I really like is it's a continuation of pilot programs that are looking at not just the base pay that we're paying teachers, which we've now brought it up to a competitive level, but also offering teachers opportunities to make more money and stay in the classroom for those teachers who do extra things, assume extra responsibilities, take on mentoring responsibilities, those kind of things. What we've seen in the past is the only place for teachers to go is into administration. And the last thing we want to do is take those good teachers out of the classroom. So giving them opportunities to grow professionally and to grow financially and stay in the classroom is something that is in this budget. It's been in the budget the last couple of years. I think that's an important thing in here. Jeff, one other thing just on education that's in this budget is there's a task force to look at how we fund schools. There's this convoluted formula that we use based on student population and all different kinds of things. Many educators, many experts, many economists believe that looking at that formula, a good hard look, how it can work the best, how can we ensure that every dollar is well spent and it is spent ensuring that every child has an opportunity to a great education. So I think this school funding formula task force, although that's very wonky, but it's something that could really have transformational changes.
In recent years, lawmakers have made a push to increase the pay for starting teachers and kind of middle of the road career teachers. This House proposal seeks to give some pretty big bonuses to teachers with 25 plus years. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about, when we talk about education funding, there is a often used piece of rhetoric about pre-recession levels of spending and per pupil spending. And I'm interested if because it's not back to where it was. Pre-recession spending per pupil, I mean, from the metrics I've seen, is not back to where it was. Should it be? Should we, North Carolina, get back to that? Or is that not something that you adhere to? Because I know some folks on the right don't believe that necessarily going back to the status quo or where things were 10 or 15 years ago is part of their priority.
Well, Jeff, just that sort of blindly going back to a snapshot in the past assumes that wherever we were was the best place to be, and that it where we were had those optimum results that we expect and we want for our students. North Carolina's economy is recovering. We're doing better than most of the other states, but the whole country is still digging out of this recession. So I think to look back over that, reevaluate, reset is a good thing to do. Just necessarily blindly saying we're going to go back to whatever the spending level is in 2009 and everything will be rosy, because the education outcomes in 2009 were not that great. I think that's a tool to use as we reevaluate things. Again, the school funding formula is something that needs to be looked at, and where we're spending that money. I think the assumption that we just need to, if we spend more money, everything will be fine, has not proven to be true. And we see that in different districts across the state. So I think, you know, looking at it, evaluating, but then moving forward with the eye on how do we provide the best opportunity for every child in every classroom across North Carolina.
Real quick follow-up, are the outcomes better today, 8 years later, than they were in 2009?
Some of those test scores indicate that, yes, we're improving. It's one of those things, you know, there are questions about the tests that are given. Are they measuring the right thing? Are we over-testing? Are we educating our kids? Are we just preparing them to take tests? Those are the kind of questions that we need to ask. I think that we are moving in the right direction. Having more opportunities for kids is another thing that's having really big successes. So I think we're making the right movements in education towards those improvements. But I don't think that just throwing more money at the problem has solved the problem in the past, and I don't think it's going to solve the problem in the future. It goes much further than that.
I imagine you see this differently.
Well, obviously, things weren't perfect a decade ago. North Carolina had a long way to go, but we were moving in the right direction. And anybody, it's easy to say don't throw money at a problem, but the simple fact of the matter is that how much a society spends on its children is a great indicator of how seriously it takes the issue of lifting them up. And in North Carolina, we had been making sustained progress over previous decades in the 90s and the early part of the 2000s to move up in the nation in this category, to move forward, to make education a top priority, to not have to worry about things like teachers paying for textbooks and buildings falling apart. And unfortunately, over the last 7 years under Republican rule, we've gone right back into that area that we were a few decades ago, in which we were a backwater state, and we're seeing the results of that in things like teachers having to pay for textbooks, in buildings that are falling apart, in stagnant test scores, and a lot of people feeling like they even want to leave the public schools because they're disappointed with the results that they get, as particularly in some of our poorer and more rural areas. So there's nothing that a state government can do that's more important than investing in its children, investing in public education. And North Carolina has been just listing along, falling further behind for the last several years, and we're going to be paying for this. The investments, for instance, that Governor Hunt and others made in things like Smart Start a couple of decades ago, they take 10, 15 years to pay off, those kinds of investments in early childhood education. So we're not going to just see immediate downturn. People figure out a way to keep things going with baling wire and duct tape in the schools. But over time, this systematic disinvestment in our public education system, as well as our other essential public structures, is going to have terrible results for our state. It's going to take us back down into sort of the muck where we were with the Alabamas and Mississippis of the country. And I think it's a tragedy. It's a lost opportunity that state lawmakers have had in recent years to repair the damage from the Great Recession, and they've flunked it miserably.
Becky, Rob says the most important component of a state spending plan is investing in children. What do you think the most important part of the state spending plan is?
I think investing in children is absolutely a high priority. It has been in North Carolina. It continues to be. It's how you invest that money. And just talking the talk or increasing administrative positions is not what does it. You know, Rob mentioned Smart Start. There's increase in funding for Smart Start in this budget. There's increase in funding for pre-kindergarten programs in this budget. A lot of things that Rob has complained about are addressed in this budget. So again, it's not how much money is spent, it's how that money is allocated, how it's spent, those investments. And then there's a responsibility to all taxpayers across North Carolina, hardworking North Carolina families. In this House budget and the Senate budget, there are tax cuts that give relief to middle-class, hardworking families. The standard deduction, the zero tax bracket, would be increased in both of these budgets. So I think that's something we're going to see come out of the conference report.
Yes.
For sure, are those kind of tax cuts, those kind, that kind of tax relief, to allow hardworking families to keep more of their money to spend the way they want to. And at the same time, we've restrained the growth of government so we don't continue to just have more and more and more, more of a burden, more regulations, more cost. Again, people have the freedom to spend their money the way they choose to spend it. And I think this is a, I think this is throughout the Senate budget and the House budget, and I think it's an important message that North Carolinians need to know.
Well, I wrote a piece this week in which I looked at the fact that what we've seen over the last 7 years in North Carolina is an assault on freedom and liberty. The right likes to talk about the notion that somehow putting more money in people's pockets or helping them hold on to their property is what freedom and liberty are about. The truth of the matter is that people are freer when their children have super first-class, high-class public education. They don't have to worry about it. When they have health care, when they have the knowledge that their environment will be protected, all those essential things that make society, make our state worth living in, the place that you want to live in, a society worth being in, all those things have been diminished over the last several years. And I would argue very strongly that, in fact, North Carolinians are less free. They have less liberty than they did 6 or 7 years ago, because these essential structures that bolster a middle-class society have been diminished regularly and serially over the last several years. So unfortunately, I just couldn't disagree more with the notion that that we're in a better place when it comes to public education. Some of these small dribs and drabs that have been added back to the budget for public education don't go anywhere near what we need. We still have teachers forking out cash out of their own wallets to pay for essentials, materials and supplies in their classrooms. If there's anything that we ought to be spending lavishly on as a state, it's public education, and we don't even come close to that.
Where is one area where you would like to see more money in education, if there is one?
Jeff, I'm not sure that more money is needed. It's how it's allocated, where it's allocated. I want to see more money in the classroom and less money for administration, less money in the Department of Public Instruction in downtown Raleigh.
But the State Board of Education, of course, we're cutting in this House budget 25% cut to DPI, Department of Public Instruction. Even the State Board of Education, which is headed by conservatives, said this is a terrible mistake. These so-called bureaucrats actually provide essential services. They're what keep this system running. They help the school systems that are in poorer areas. They help. There's so many essential services that are provided by the folks who work in the Department of Public Instruction. We saw a similar cut of more than $20 million to administration in the university system. It's the same thing. You can't keep hollowing out these systems. Eventually, they're going to collapse. They'll be able to keep it going for a while. People are smart. They'll figure out ways to you know, as I say, use baling wire and duct tape to keep things going. But over time, as you regularly disinvest in these essential core structures, eventually you're going to pay the piper. And I think we're getting close to that point in North Carolina.
Not to oversimplify, do you see it as death by a thousand cuts?
Absolutely. I think that's the intention. I think the intention is that there is a strong belief amongst conservatives in the General Assembly that government is the enemy, that government is a bad thing, that we need to shrink it, as you know, Grover Norquist says, drown it in a bathtub. And I see it completely the opposite. I see our public structures and systems as the thing that knit together our middle class society, and to the extent that we continue to disinvest in them, we're disinvesting in ourselves.
Government clearly has a role, but that role needs to be limited. And when government overtakes people's lives, they have less freedom, they have less opportunity, and that's what we're moving towards in North Carolina, is giving people more freedom, more liberty, more opportunity to spend money and do things, enjoy their lives, get off the government dole, not be so dependent on government, give them the opportunity to flourish and take responsibility for themselves and enjoy all of the benefits that come from that.
When you say North Carolina is moving in the right direction,
right,
does that mean it's moving toward a state that you have in mind?
No. North Carolina is a leader. North Carolina is a leader in the country, and they need to be more of a leader. North Carolina's goal, our goal at the John Locke Foundation, is to advocate for policies that make North Carolina first in freedom. We don't need to copy another state. There are best practices in other states that surely we should look at as we develop these ideas, develop these policies, and there are as many ideas out there as there are states. Of course we should look to other places where things are successful, not only states, but other countries as well. But the responsibility of North Carolina lawmakers and the thing that North Carolinians and North Carolina taxpayers expect is less government interference in their life while providing those core functions that we do expect government to do, and then get out of the way and leave me alone.
Of course, how could 500,000 people who don't have health care as a result of our decision not to expand Medicaid, how are they possibly, could we consider them to be freer than they would be if they had health care?
What is that going to cost everybody else?
If those people, I'm talking about the 500,000 people, if those people had health care, you can't deny that they
and
would
Rob,
be demonstrably freer in their lives.
Well, first of all, 500,000 is an overestimate by many people's. Most of those people, over 80% of those people, are single, working age, childless adults. That money and those resources would be better spent in workforce development, reduced fees at community colleges, getting those people back to work. Yes, we are. It is in the budget, Rob. Read it.
No, I read the budget,
Becky. There's increased scholarships at community
colleges.
Tuition
has been shooting up at community colleges.
Apprenticeship programs, all those kind of things of getting people back to work so that they can provide for themselves and their family and have the freedom to enjoy their lives without the dependency on government.
What do you expect Roy Cooper to do with the final budget that gets to him? He can sign into law, he can veto, he can let this become law without his signature. Do you have an early forecast? This is something we'll talk about probably again in the weeks to come.
I think it's it's obviously the most important bill that is passed every year in the General Assembly. There's nothing more important, more broad-based in its effect. I'm almost certain Governor Cooper will veto the final version of the bill that comes out of the conference report, since both the House and the Senate versions of the bill, although they have some differences, are not even close to what he's proposed. It's going to be obviously very difficult for him to sustain that veto, but it's important for him to make a statement. We're having a debate in this state right now. We're having an ideological debate about the direction the state should go. And if Governor Cooper wants to make that argument, he needs to put some action, he's put those words into action. And so I fully expect him to do it, and it'll be a difficult fight, but I think that's what we can look forward to in the coming weeks.
Jeff, I thought it was interesting. On the House budget vote, 12 Democrats, I believe, joined Republicans to vote for the budget.
That would be more.
That throws a little bit of a wrench in the, monkey wrench in the works. I agree with Rob. I would anticipate that Governor Cooper will veto the budget. As the head of the Democratic Party in this state, as the leader of the Democratic Party, and also leading up to whatever the next election is, what he does and the positions that he does are important not only to him but to his party. And I would anticipate that he would veto it. I would also anticipate that the General Assembly, with the supermajority that they hold, will quickly override that veto. Now, one thing that is kind of interesting on it, I was looking at this yesterday, when the General Assembly is in session, he has 10 days with which to either sign it or veto it, or, after 10 days he doesn't do anything, then it goes away. The budget needs to be in place by the end of the fiscal year on June 30th. So, kind of backing up from that, when does the General Assembly finish the conference report? When do they get it over there to allow that 10 days, just kind of doing that math in our heads, looks to me like maybe Monday, June 19th would be kind of the last day that the General Assembly could get it over to him to make all of the timing work right. So I guess the good news for many of us is we may have a budget mid-June, whatever is decided on, the final document to go into effect by the end of the fiscal year.
Rob Schofield is Director of Research at NC Policy Watch, part of the North Carolina Justice Center, and Becky Gray is a lobbyist and Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Thank you both.
Thank you, Jeff.